What are people paying for insurance under what's dubbed the Affordable Care Act? From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Survey results out this morning suggest many Americans who signed up for health insurance under what's labeled the Affordable Care Act do actually find their coverage affordable. That's particularly true for people with very low incomes who are paying less than $125 a month for a policy. That's on par with what many people pay to get health coverage through their jobs. But from the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY, Dan Gorenstein reports for people earning $30,000 a year and over, the premium often seem expensive.
To be sure, there were good deals for consumers in year one of the ACA, but the Commonwealth Fund's Sarah Collins, who co-authored this report, says for individuals earning about 30 grand or families of four earning 60, those deals could be hard to find.
People are paying more than they would have if they'd gotten a plan through an employer.
Collins' report raises an important question. Are the ACA subsidies generous enough to make insurance affordable? The federal government is on track to spend at least $11 billion in financial assistance this year. Sharon Long with the Urban Institute says a chunk of people who buy their own coverage in and off the exchanges are still struggling.
Among those who are buying coverage on their own, almost half report that they're satisfied with their coverage, but that means about half are not satisfied.
For them, the big problem, says Long, is price. She quickly adds that's the case for more than half the 41 million Americans who remain uninsured. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
2 weeks ago, Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reported a story here about how the professional-style social network LinkedIn censors content from its members in China on its site throughout the world. Our correspondent figured this out when some of his own LinkedIn content was removed. Today, LinkedIn announced that it's now changing this censorship policy. Here's our report.
Up until now, LinkedIn was blocking posts from its members in China that were deemed sensitive by China's government. For example, posts about the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests or about Tibetan independence. LinkedIn not only blocked this content inside of China, but it removed these posts from its site worldwide. In an email to Marketplace, LinkedIn Director of Communications Hani Dersey wrote, "The company has officially changed this policy so that sensitive content will still be censored inside China, but not on its site outside China." China social media expert Jeremy Goldcorn says LinkedIn isn't the first Western company that has bent over backwards to please China's government in return for access to its market.
But it's a very difficult environment to navigate because the lines shift, you know. So today you might be in a space where you feel very comfortable and you might think you've gone out of your way to please the government, and it still might not work.
Bloomberg's a good example. Late last year, the news site killed a story that exposed corruption among China's leadership. Despite the kowtow to China's government, Bloomberg's site in China remains blocked. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
City has gotten attention for its new city-funded preschools that just opened this month. But around the country, the typical pattern is private preschool run by people working out of their homes. These tend to hit the news when something awful happens. But reporter Deepa Fernandez has a story now about daycare workers who are also supplying much-needed social capital.
Vanessa Easley's day starts early, around 5:30 in her Long Beach, California home.
That might be a parent. Hold on.
Vanessa and her husband Earl together run a home childcare called Little Tykes, serving up to 24 kids a day. Vanessa has been at this for 19 years, and she's proud of her blended curriculum that incorporates all the things little ones need, like vocal work.
Ready, set, go!
The art of jumping jacks. And some pre-business negotiating skills.
Pineapple.
We don't have pears. Pineapples. We have pears today.
Okay, I want pears.
Okay, home childcare providers today. Like Easley tend to do it all these days as their families rely on them for more than just childcare. Single mum, Kinta Cox, has sent her daughters to Easley since they were toddlers.
She's taking my kids to the doctor during emergencies. She is there for me when I can't make it to go speak to the teacher because maybe there's a problem.
Little Tykes might help you.
Hi, Perla.
And then there are the almost daily add-ons that the husband-wife team do for no extra charge.
So she has no way to get the kids home, so she's asking if we can bring them.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Easley and her husband are not making much money.
We're probably pulling in like maybe 30,000-40,000 for both of us.
A 2012 Health and Human Services study found that the average home childcare provider nationwide worked 54 hours a week and earned just $22,000. William Yu of UCLA's Anderson Forecast studies the economy of early childhood education. He says the entry qualifications for childcare workers are similar to prison guards.
But if you look at the prison guards, they are making $72,000. It doesn't make sense.
Sophia's here and she ate dinner.
14 hours later, at 7:30, there's still a couple kids waiting to be picked up. In Los Angeles, I'm Deepa Fernandez for Marketplace.
The gap between rich and poor is very much on display in America's financial and media capital. New Census Bureau figures released today find that the widest income gap of any county in the country can be found right here on Manhattan Island, New York City, New York. Between 2012 and 2013, the typical income for the top 5% went up 9% to $864,000 a year. Meanwhile, the median income for everybody went up about 1% and is still significantly below the peak set before the financial crisis. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.